Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Well, we're back and it's 2023, baby.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, guys.
Boots, Balls and Bras podcast back with Far Williams, Earth Pond, and I'm Beck Smith. Right. Let's just get into it, eh? Mm-hmm. First half, player safety and facilities. Lots going on in the game Chelsea versus Liverpool. It's been nonstop talk about it since it's happened. Basically, the game got suspended after 6 minutes into the match due to the pitch being frozen. Lots of chat about what actually happened. They actually said at 9:30 the pitch was not playable. And then they did kick off the game. And after a few players looking like they were ice skaters, it had to get called off after 6 minutes. What are you guys' thoughts on this? I have a few thoughts as well, but I'd like to hear what you guys have to say first.
Kickoff pundit.
Yeah, you were there.
Yeah, I was there, correct. And I actually was supposed to be there for 10 o'clock. And as you said, I got the information that the game wasn't playable at 9:30. So therefore, I stayed at home in my bed because it's only a 15-minute drive. To then get the message at 10 o'clock to say they're doing whatever they can to get this game on was a little bit frustrating because, you know, when I looked out into my garden or at the front garden, my grass was frozen. Yeah. So, and I looked at the weather and the temperatures were never going to get any better than what they were. So yeah. I couldn't understand how the game, you know, within a few hours would have been playable. Yep. I think it just poses the question as to if a decision was made by the official at 9:30 from their point of view, and they're in charge on match day, from what I know, they're in charge of whether the game is to go ahead. For them to call the decision and say it's not playable at 9:30, for that to be compromised in some way, which I don't think has been made clear. I think, you know, there was an FA statement put out about how the game was put on. I think a few people have been thrown under the bus, especially the official, in that statement. I don't believe that all parties were involved in the decision making, because if they were, I don't think that the managers the interview after that 6 minute game, if you can call it a game, after that 6 minute period, I don't think from their interviews will tell or will suggest to you that they were involved in any decision making as to whether the game should have gone ahead. But it just goes back to the whole thing about the women's game being professional. Where are we in our women's game? You know, for this to not happen again. And I think somebody, for those decision makings, whoever made that decision, which I don't think will become clear anytime soon, but somebody needs to be accountable for that so that this doesn't happen again in the future of our game.
Yeah.
I don't know what you two's thoughts on it is, but from an outsider that weren't there, because I knew just being there, it shouldn't have been played.
Mm.
I think for me, it's quite clear, and I don't want to beat around the bush. They were currently putting profits over people. And for the safeguarding of players, so we've got to be clear, it's the safeguarding of players to be even at risk shows us that there's a problem. Forget about the infrastructures and what's happening in terms of the pitch. There's a lot going around, I guess, the FA and is it the club's responsibility? I think there's a few things that we need to address. With clubs, we look at the infrastructure, we look at their roster, they have all these plans in terms of what we need to do as a club on the pitch. But shouldn't it be your responsibility? If you want to ensure that your games go ahead, that your pitches are suitable to play. We live in the UK, we see every time there's 1 millimetre of ice, the place comes to a halt. So it's going to be no difference in terms of football.
Yeah.
So yes, in terms of, do we have to really have that regulation from a national governing organisation point of view to say, get your pitches under soil heating? I don't think we even need to have that. As a club, you should think, for us to operate, we need to have this to make sure our games take place.
Mm.
So actually, how can you take the responsibility? What can we do as a club to make sure that the game goes ahead? So that's why I was a bit kind of disappointed in terms of, I saw a lot of players tweeting about the risk and the safety. Why are they not asking their clubs these questions around, we need financial infrastructure to make sure that as a club, because we're all a family, we talk about being one club, that we are able to operate and play our game. And I don't think that actually was sort of put at the forefront. So number one, I think that's a problem. In terms of the referees, we talk about it. The game doesn't happen without referees and they're still not full time. So if we're talking about the growth of the game and the players and the clubs, actually, we need to make sure we have that investment in terms of the referee and the officials to be at a standard where they're able to make these decisions, make these calls and feel actually their position is not at risk. And I think that's really important.
Let me ask something on that, because we always complain about the referees, right? We always say that they're not professional. You know, we need full-time professionals in our game, blah, 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 right? This referee, from my information, was said at 9:30, the game was not playable. Right. If that decision was stood by, that would have been excellent officiating of the game. Right. Because it shouldn't have been playable.
Yep.
How was this officials, I don't know who it was. How have they been compromised into a decision to allow the game to go ahead? That's when you go back to they're an amateur official, because a full-time professional is going, they're standing by because referees are strict. They never communicate. They don't want to compromise. So how was they compromised? This is what I can't get my head around. But, I mean, Bex, I'd love to hear your view, because somebody who works closer with the refs surely will have a better... Surely you've spoken to them.
Surely I have. Yeah. I was on the phone last night.
I just don't get it. I thought it would have been a great decision. We would all today been speaking about a good decision from the officials. Finally.
So I have lots of thoughts on this. They're not really specifically to Paul Howard, who is the referee. They're more around what you're talking about, Eartha, which is the structure and the infrastructure around the game and how decisions are made in a league and in football. One, the club licensing requirements. So if you have a club and you can play in a league, there are certain requirements that you have to have as a club. Question, should under pitch heating be one of those requirements? Because as we know, most of the teams in the WSL don't own their own stadia, right? And Kings Meadow is an exception that they, well, they rent it still. So they rent those stadia, they don't own them. And even the ones that do, they don't often have underground heating. So when I was playing in Germany, we every single season had games canceled because of pitches. Every season. It was just a known fact. But then you had to shove them into the end of the season. So you then at the end of the season are tired and have way too many games. In Sweden, where it got to minus 15 degrees, minus 20, never had one game called off because they went from natural grass to the Kunstrasen, which is what? Artificial turf, in those periods. So they had the infrastructure in place. So that's one question for me. Second one is, as the regulations stand, the clubs can have a pitch inspection match day minus one. They can request that referees or the match officials can come make that decision the day before the game. Done. No one has to travel. No one has to warm up. You can reschedule the game. You have a jump start. The fans aren't disappointed, et cetera, et cetera. That
and you
did
know,
not
on that
happen
point,
by Chelsea, but it did happen with Arsenal.
Yeah,
which
but
is
you
why
know
they
that point,
in time.
Bex, is that I'm, if I was to look at our game, we're probably, if there's a comparison, it's League Two, right? So our league stadiums that we probably play at League One, League Two, there was only two games in the men's League Two games that went ahead on that Saturday. Does that not indicate that there should have been a pitch inspection on the Saturday to see whether, and then that would have, all of what you're saying now. So why didn't they?
From what the information that I got from the match officials is they did ask Chelsea if they wanted one and they had said, no, they don't want one. So they denied a match inspection on match day minus one. And then at 9:30, when Paul arrived, he made the decision that it wasn't playable. And then the pitch, they have to speak to the pitch guys because they're the ones that know the pitches the best, you know? So the referee can't say, and this is another question I have is, should the referees be making this decision at all? In my opinion, no. It should be an FA. It should be the league competitions that are making those decisions, which is how it was at FIFA, how it is at UEFA. We make that call because why should a referee be standing there making that call in the first place? So they could have done a pitch inspection match day minus one. They didn't do it. And then on the day, they decided to put on the heaters, put on the cover, whatever. At the warm-up, it was fine because obviously when you take the cover off, the heat's still in the ground. But as you said, it's still 0 degrees, so it just refroze. So I agree. I think it should have been called off, but I do think that there's pressure, as you mentioned, from different parties. And that's the question I have, because what's coming out in the media is not necessarily what's happened on that morning.
Oh, for sure. But you know, even when the covers come off, Bex, half of the pitch was playable. And the other half in the shade was not playable. We was doing our punditry from the side where the goalkeepers were warming up, and obviously having played at Liverpool.
How crap would that be, by the way, to be a goalkeeper on the ice?
to the goalkeepers during their warm-up.
Yeah.
And they were saying it is like playing on concrete. Ooh. This game shouldn't go ahead. So as a goalkeeper, they also thought it shouldn't have gone ahead. Yeah. But there's so many mixed messages coming out of the camp as to who wanted the game to go ahead. I'm sure Chelsea would have liked the game to go ahead.
Yeah, of course they would,
because of
right?
backlog of games. They have, they're in the Champions League.
Exactly.
They're still in all of the cups. So for them,
not leading
having
the
an extra game, and wanting to probably stay at the top of the league.
Exactly.
Because that psychological thing. I know what you're saying, Irvin, you're going to jump in, but I'm saying all of these things wasn't considered from Chelsea, I don't believe. And they wanted the game to go ahead because...
I spoke
to the Liverpool manager.
Yeah.
And?
At 9:30, they was told the game wasn't playable.
Mm-hmm.
They were then called again and they was told that the game was going to be made potentially delayed till 2:00. His concerns were there was travelling supporters at Liverpool were paying for. So there was travelling supporters coming down from 5:00.
Mm-hmm.
Have we considered them? Also, if the game's going to be delayed, they would then have to speak to the hotel to get another pre-match meal put in because the players had already had their pre-match meal in preparation for a 12:30 kickoff. He then got a call half an hour later to say the game's going ahead at the normal time of 12:30. So there was at not any point was he asked whether he thinks the game should go ahead. So the FA statement that actually come out that said all parties were involved in the decision making, all parties must have been officials, FA. That can be the parties.
Not the managers.
Teams, right. So it's not all parties.
And it's not really the FA and the officials that have
made that decision.
All parties, as in order for a game to be called off, there are only two people that can call a game off. The police for safety or the match official or referee.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, the game can't be called off. So when they say all parties, maybe that's the restrictions in terms of all parties.
There was a meeting. There was an FA meeting at 10:30 as to trying to... figure out whether the game should go ahead. So there was an internal from wherever they were, which have been told, this is factual information, that there was a conversation going on as to whether the game should or shouldn't go ahead. Who made the final decision? I don't think we'll ever know. It has to be the referee.
Yeah.
But I believe he was compromised into making that decision.
But my point is, even with those meetings taking place, the people who it actually affects the most, the players, are not involved. So this is my whole point around the safeguarding of the people that are there to entertain. What leg do they really have to stand on to say, actually, I think it's a risk for me to go out and play. Potentially I can get injured or something can happen. Do they have the confidence to say, actually, I'm not walking on the pitch? And if they don't walk on the pitch, what's the consequences? So when we look at organisations, for example, like the PFA that are there, for members and like these are the type of what legal leg do I have to stand on to think actually I think I'm putting my life, my body at risk by going on that pitch. If I say no, what happens? Same for the referees. If I say actually go ahead when I really believe it shouldn't, what legal leg do I have to stand on to say actually it's not happening? No matter what meeting's happening, I, as the official, I don't believe this is the right thing to happen, and if I don't sort of go through my obligations as referee in that game, what's the consequences? And I think that grey area is the bit why, and they, I think they just use the emotional love of the game because they know people just want to, we'll play injured, we want to play football.
Like,
but what actually, if I really don't, and I think it is really
a
safeguard.
That's the point, Earth, isn't it?
I can't go
on the pitch. You can't there come out after and saying you put our safety at risk, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you still went on and knowing it was going to be risky. So it is that balance as how much power does a player have to go, actually, this is unsafe. I asked Emma Hayes after the game in the 6-minute interview. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to know if any of the players had complained in the warm-up about the pitch.
And?
And her answer to that, if you listen to the BBC, was that she's obviously trained her players psychologically that they don't make excuses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So none of them complained.
Yeah, of course.
Now, but then they complained in the game.
Yeah.
That's a well-being concern then.
Exactly.
You've kind of put a mindset that actually, even when things are wrong, that you're not actually going to speak up and or do it because the game's a bigger thing rather than you and your safety. So I think as a leader, that's a poor, I guess, mentality in terms of well-being, maybe in terms of tactics and playing, yes. But actually, if something's wrong, how are you going to call it out? If they're not calling out, actually, I'm going to risk my life and play on an ice pitch, they're not going to call out other stuff that's happening in the game.
Yeah, and I think it is a good point. And I think you're right in the sense that players need to be a stakeholder in the game. And we spoke about this really early on in our pod, didn't we? That players, we feel that in the women's game specifically, that female players have a much bigger role in really making decisions and pushing the game forward. But in this case, I don't think players should be involved in these decisions. What I think needs to happen is the league structure and the competition structure needs to be set up in a way that there's enough understanding of one, pitches, because that is a whole science of what's going on with the pitch. So that has to be known, and a referee does not have that knowledge, one. And two, I think that the second issue is that they have to have an understanding of player safety, well-being, safeguarding.
And they should.
And those decisions should already be made. So I don't think that as a player, they should be making those decisions ahead of the game, saying, I'm going to play or I'm not going to play, because you just want to play.
I would have been, exactly.
You should
have
the
player
trust,
that
right?
Yeah.
You should have the trust that this league knows what they're doing. Mm-hmm. The people that are in the decision-making positions know like what the right thing is to do. Mm-hmm. And whatever they do, I'm going to trust that is. That's the situation I think we should be in.
For sure.
But are we there? No.
No, but then the solution to this isn't just undersoil heating. That's not the solution to this.
I agree.
That is just something that, it's the same with VAR. You know, for me, our game, right, is on a journey to professionalism. Mm-hmm. We're nowhere near professional yet, right? We are as status is professional, right? Because it's a professional game. Yeah. You get paid to play, whatever. You train every day. We are on the runway. We haven't even reversed back yet to even get onto the runway to go, right? But we seem to think that we're up in the air and landed in Barbados at the minute. That's what I genuinely believe. Yeah. We aren't taking the smaller steps to make the game professional. We are bypassing those smaller steps. Mm-hmm. All we're thinking about, let's pump billions of pounds into VAR. Is that really a priority right now in women's game?
That's a really good
point. Is undersoil heating
really
a priority?
Yeah.
Of course, further down the line, let's get the foundations of our game in a better structure before we jump to the end goal, which is where the men are at now. How many years has it took for the men to get to VAR, to get to goal line technology? You know, all of these things, the women's game want straight away.
Yeah.
And it can't happen.
Pitches has to be at the forefront of the fundamentals. We've seen pitches or games being canceled because they're waterlogged.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, that's a drainage issue. That is not something that we should be dealing with in the world's quote unquote top league, which I don't think it is personally.
Well, goes back to, doesn't it? Mm. You know, fans and everybody saying, should the women play at the men's stadiums? The games potentially, especially because they're all Premier League, apart from Reading. In the WSL, which their game never gets called off at the Majeski or Select Stadium now. So in actual fact, they play at the men's game. For somebody that probably the league would want them out and to get a Premier League team in, they're doing all right in terms of keeping their women's games on. They train at the men's training ground. Should we be playing the games at the men's grounds? I don't know, because again, the stadiums are too big to fill. And in terms of all of the money that then gets invested into having stewards there and all the health and safety, the ambulance, all that, is far too expensive for the amount of fans that, one, the cost that we charge them, and two, that actually come into the ground. So that's the difficulty in playing at the men's ground. Hence why we play at smaller stadiums where you're not at a loss or not at a bigger loss.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult one.
I guess we're all saying the same thing in terms of, it's just the infrastructure. Like, we talk about the training facilities, the match day facilities, the well-being facilities, all of those things in order for, I guess, the players to be the best version of themselves, they need as a non-negotiable. And I think there's too much variation in terms of clubs. And I think actually maybe some of the clubs that we look at as the biggest clubs, actually they're not even investing lower down in those foundational pieces. So I guess there still needs to have that bigger conversations with the NGOs, with the clubs, with the sponsors. Actually, how can we ensure that actually the game is growing? Like you said, Farah, in terms of the entertainment piece, if you look at it in terms of numbers and eyes, it is the biggest league other than the Premier League in terms of the UK.
Yeah, sure.
In terms of viewers, it's the second biggest league. It's outpassed
the
Championship.
UK,
it's outpassed 100 in cricket. It is now the second biggest watched league within the UK. So there's going to be more eyes on it, which means there's going to be more scrutiny of actually what's going right and what's going well. And I think it's more about finding a solution. We can't keep pointing the fingers. What are we going to, like, what action are we going to do? Don't tell me, show me. Like, what are we going to do?
It's true.
And
it can't come down to the players.
It can't come down to the players.
And as you mentioned there, the people above, the decision makers have to be held accountable for the decisions that are being made, right or wrong, right? Because we all make mistakes. All of us, we all make. So when we're making when the women's game's in a great position, everybody wants to say it was them that were the reason behind why it's so good, why we've got all these fans in the stadium, why we have this and that. When the women win the Euros, they want to be, oh, it was because we did this and... Okay, now we've made a mistake, a big mistake, right? And we put people's lives at risk, potentially, playing on an icy pitch.
Call it what it is.
Come out and be accountable and say, hold your hands up, made a mistake. should never have been played
out of office.
And then,
we know you roll
again because we'll be better equipped for that to make better decisions. Just hold yourself accountable.
I totally agree. And that's like exact opposite of just got back from LA. What happens in America is just blame everybody no matter what. But this is what I liked about BB's Steinhaus Webb's comments. I don't know if you read her article on BBC, but I thought that's what she did brilliantly, because regardless of what Paul Howard, the referee who made the decision, and he didn't make it alone, he obviously had the support of the match officials, did. She said there's a lot of learnings that have come from this. And it's not just about the referee made a wrong decision. It's everything. It's all the stakeholders involved. It's the timings of different things. And to be honest, they were watching the weather for Monday. Yeah. They knew that this was going to be a risk. And I think that's commendable as well. But I definitely think there's definitely some big learnings that we can take from that one. And now into our halftime team talk. We're going to give you a little bit of the Barclays WSL roundup. Reading versus Man United must have been one of the best. I mean, I loved that game.
I did.
Look at you smiling, all happy.
I did. I enjoyed the game too, Bex. Yeah. It was because I think Reading have gone back to what I know them to be in terms of their shape and what they actually believe in, their principles of play.
And can I jump in? Because you said this at the beginning of the season when we were talking on this podcast. You said that Reading has a good foundation. They have a good coach. Mm. They have the basics, the principles, and you learned a lot at that club. So sorry, it's nice to see it coming through.
And they didn't
move
away from the principles, so to speak, a little bit. But they did the shape and everything that they really believed in. They've actually gone back to a diamond, which is a really difficult formation to play, especially in the league. And they've gone back to that, and it actually really works for them. Mm. They have hardworking players, honest players, and they really push Man United. But what it did show, for as good as Reading were, and probably, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, they deserve something out of the game based on all the efforts they had. They obviously saved the penalty. They had a couple of chances. Emma Harris had a couple of chances. So they did have chances. But I sat there knowing Man United were going to score. And you know, if this was last season, I wouldn't have been sat there thinking United were going to score. Yeah. But something has changed at Man United. And I knew, and you know, Lucy Staniforth had messaged, how are United Reading getting on? I'd message her, you know, Reading are doing really well to stay in the game, blah, blah, blah. I think they're going to concede. United will score before the end. 4 minutes later, I texted her and said, they've just scored a goal. So you could feel it.
Was it 87th
minute? Yeah, and you could feel it coming from Man United. And I think that's what's changed. And that's why they are title contenders this year. And I don't know what you lot are thinking about Spurs, but they ain't catching United.
No, I
have to throw that in.
Obviously, Drake was it with the goal again. What was that? Fiftieth clean sheet.
Kelly Chambers, 150 games in charge of a team in the league. So
unheard of.
You won't get another manager. Maybe Emma Hayes.
Maybe.
That's interesting, though, because we did have that manager chat, didn't we?
Yeah,
one of the things I said was that the consistency of having a manager and being able to create the culture, create a real playing style, that takes so much time. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to see the things coming out for Reading.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, like, do you think, like, obviously we sort of joke about Earps at the back, like, do you think just having that secure back line, like, because I always remember, like, Germany and Neuer, like, you always knew, like, he's a sweeper.
Oh, yeah.
He's there, like, anything comes over. Like, I think she's kind of command that in terms of that extra player and like belief, like even if it does get past the other 10, there's someone here that's just gonna just do the damn thing. So I think in terms of, I don't think people value like how much she means to that team. And I think you touched on Nikita Paris on our last conversation in terms of her coming in and just being resilient in terms of, I guess, pressuring the back lines and doing and playing well. And I think they're really having this belief as a team and really sort of forging those partnerships. And I think it's just sort of transferred that confidence from the Euros, but also just as a club. I think before, I'm not too sure if they believe they deserve to be there just because of, I guess, the history of the club. But I think now they really believe in, like, we can really make a stamp on the women's game. And I had a conversation this week about, imagine Man United men's and women winning the league this season.
Well, not after the weekend.
And then not after the weekend. But I think the women are.
But
are
also,
driving
you talk about that stability. And Beck, you played in a back line, and that consistency of having, you know, a back line that you can communicate with, you're on the same page in terms of like when to squeeze, when to drop off, when to jump out, whatever it might be, and the goalkeeper communicating that to you. Man United, other than being forced into making a change when what's her name got injured, what's the fullback's name, how have I forgot
who the brilliant one
yeah When Hannah Blundell got injured at one point, and he had to bring in Thomas Doty.
Yeah.
And then the other fullback, Batia.
Yeah.
She got injured. So they're the only forced changes Man United have had to make in their back line. Otherwise, they've kept the back line pretty much the same all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and obviously with the goalkeeper, and I think that consistency really helps the team in terms of the foundations to build.
100%. And I like that you mentioned the German goalkeeper Neuer, because when I was playing, it was Germany was number one, and they were number one by far, or it was the US. And you look at their goalkeepers, and they had Rottenberg, who we used to call the Rottweiler.
Yes. Do I remember her? Of course I do.
Very scary. And Natze Angerer, Nadine Angerer, also like a total nutcase, but an amazing goalkeeper. And then you had Hope Solo on the US women's team. Mm. So that just that anchor starting with the goalkeeper.
Yeah, and, we're not mentioning Pauline Cope here.
Mate, exactly. Pauline
Cope. Keeper.
Why are you not using that vocabulary in terms of nutters? You don't have to. Do you have to be crazy to be a goalkeeper?
Yes, you were at one point.
Yes, absolutely.
Crazy.
But like in a good way. But in a great way. I think some of my best friends are goalkeepers. Actually, most of my best friends from all the games, all of the teams I played on were goalkeepers. But I think it's that relationship too that you have, because as a center back, and maybe Rio would agree or disagree, but you know, that relationship with the nutcase behind you, and then you have to sort of be the nutcase up front, that, you know, it's, you're the last one. So that stability, I think, is massive.
I love the way you say most of your best friends were the goalkeeper. Did you have a choice? Because it seems like they were bullying you, like, you are my best friend. And you were like, yes, I am.
And you will do what I say. Yes, I will.
You know, going on that United, so obviously United got a win off the back of Manchester City only picking up a point at Villa. At home to Villa, one-one. And I don't know if you guys watched that game, but
I watched it.
They weren't lucky. That's probably the wrong word. On another day, City probably would have lost that. So if you look at the opening game of the season when Aston Villa beat City, it could have been that game. It's lucky that they're a little bit further into their development as a team that they stayed in the game, because actually they hit the post, Aston Villa.
Yeah.
There was a great save from Eddie Robert down in the bottom corner. So it was one of those games where Manchester City actually could have lost. And you lot have put them third, right? To finish third. I've still got...
No, wait.
Man City.
Hold up.
Wait, what?
So what are you saying? Man City's out Tottenham's in?
No, I'm saying, as I said always, Chelsea, United,
don't get her started.
Chelsea, United, and Arsenal. But I'm
Do you know what, though?
Villa are building, aren't they?
Yes, and that the Aston Villa was one that I wanted to mention, because they sort of, they didn't come out of nowhere. They've always had good players. And actually, you guys have mentioned some of the players that we've had on our top, you know, 11 for WSL of the week. But I really like how they're shaping up and like moving on to the transfers, which we'll talk about as well. They obviously picked up Jordan Knobbs, but really interesting that Man City is wobbling.
Mm. It's just they dropped a point. They just don't.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Unless Bunny Shaw's firing and Lauren Hemp is firing, it's quite difficult. I still feel they don't have stability at the back. We talk about that at Man United. I don't think they know their strongest back line. You see Esme Morgan, she got taken off at half time in that game. That she played fullback. They brought Kennedy in at right side centre half. So that imbalance, inconsistency at the back four, they've got a consistent front three. They've now got a midfield that they seem comfortable with. It's just the back line. They're just not comfortable right now.
Back to what you said.
Not saying that the individuals aren't good. Yeah. They haven't played together for long enough. it's one in, one out every other week. So they haven't had a consistent back four, five, if you include a goalkeeper, this season.
I used to hate that too. Yeah. I used to hate it when they changed the back line like every game. You really want that consistency because you have to know where everyone's going because it's such an important role too. You know, you step out of that back line, you know you're creating the gaps. You want to know that they're behind you, but you also want to know that you have that confidence to be able to, you know, get into the midfield, make some tackles and have the coverage as well. But I agree. I don't think Man City has had it since the beginning.
I think they're reliant on like three or four players. And if those three or four players are locked out the game, then it's like, what else can we do? Like, we're not finding a way. And then if we're relying on things like set pieces, they just don't have the quality and the height if the other players are locked out the game. So, yeah, they have to go back to the drawing board and I think they have to be really smart in terms of recruitment going forward. But
yeah, because so many have left, haven't they? There was a massive migration out of the club. What about Everton, West Ham? So Everton won 3-0 against West Ham, means Everton moves up to fifth place. And Everton kind of that sneaky one in the middle of the table, haven't they been?
Yeah.
Like they've had some really disappointing games, some really strong games. They're just so inconsistent for me.
They're trying to build, aren't they, under their new manager? They're trying to build where they play out from the back. So they want to play through the thirds. That's their style of play. At times, for me, too slow. I know everybody was raving after the derby when they beat Liverpool at Anfield. And everybody raved about how good Everton were. I actually thought on that day, Liverpool wasn't very good. For as good as Everton were, Liverpool wasn't great. And they're just slow in their build phase, everything they do. And they're not able to score or wasn't able to score. They've actually come back into the new year and their game against Reading last weekend, they won 3-2. Again, it was a game that they probably could have drawn, but they got three goals. So they're actually scoring. And then they've scored again three against West Ham.
Yeah.
But even the West Ham game,
West Ham had chances to score.
There was a potential penalty shout for a handball. So again, that game on decision making could have been different.
Yeah.
So again, are they false in terms of like not the results because obviously they've got them, but I'm not convinced yet on Everton.
They're not reflective.
What I do like is that they now have a structure.
Yeah.
They now you know, when you look at them, they are building an identity. Does it suit their players and the intent? No, they still need I think some leaders within that team.
There's a big but there. For me, great team performance, getting the 3 points. For me, the concern is there's too many low knees. When they go, what happens next? You then have to fill that gap and find those players. For me, they're performing well with good players from other clubs coming in who've trained day in, day out at a higher intensity with better players that have come in and made the difference. What happens when that loan spell finishes or Man City think, actually, we need to pull Park back? Or what happens then? And that's the thing in terms of, I think they're just building rather than they're not going to be a sort of potential threat. I think the game on the weekend, West Ham, the first 15, 20 minutes.
Dreadful, weren't they? Yeah, they
awful.
Were.
So
they
it
were.
Was more of actually the team not playing well and them actually playing well rather than actually they sort of annihilated West Ham in that term. So I'm just concerned around the low knees and when they're removed, what does that look like for the Everton squad?
And on to the second half. Let's get into the transfers for the Barclays WSL in this January transfer window, yeah?
Should we get our head stuck into then all the transfer window? Let's get into the transfer window because there's been some ins and outs and, some big decisions made in this window for some of the teams that
I always
we
like
speak
that
about.
Too,
so,
don't
yeah.
you? Like you go halfway in the middle of the season, it's like, woo, I here you can shuffle your cards again.
As a fan, I love it because I'm like, what's going to happen here? Yeah. Who's going to make changes and who's going to go first? And I mean, you guys team, Spurs seem to have gone early with a huge transfer
record-breaking.
Huge!
Don't bring us down. Record-breaking. If we do it, we're doing it properly.
Transfer fee of the league in Beth England, who you know we know, prolific. She's a goal scorer. It's what they needed, having let Rach Williams go in the summer to Man United, which I think for them was a massive mistake. They started to build last season. They weren't conceding many goals. They had a really good structure at the back. Again, they never used to change their back line. They've had to change it quite a bit
injuries
this year.
Too. Injuries too.
And play with a five at times because they brought in an extra centre half and they didn't want to leave her out. So they've had big, big decisions to make. But they've brought a goal scorer in and they've also now brought a creator in. Iwobuchi from Arsenal.
Yeah.
So them two signings for Tottenham, along with Kit Graham coming back, that is like another signing.
Graham.
So these three, Kit Graham coming back, Iwabuchi. Now you've got Drew Spence there and you've got Beth England.
You're and starting Percival's to build. Coming back. Coming back
thank you. Thank you're you for the Kiwi mention. There you go. So,
and even, what's the fullback? The one that was at
Neville.
The left back. No. What's her name? Was at Birmingham. How can I not know her? I forgot her name.
Oh, Harrop.
Yeah. Even Harrop, in terms of her experience and understanding of the W, like, of the get, like yeah. she's such an important player to them. And I don't think they realised that. She was out for a long period.
Huh?
These players coming back, maybe Spurs have a chance next season of finishing top five. But no, they are like those ins and out, like especially those signings and players coming back, I think for Spurs could have a good second half of the season. I don't know what you guys think.
No, I think they were just, sorry, I'll head over to you, Earth, but I think the first half of the season they were decimated by so many injuries. And I think that was such a hard mental thing for them as well. And so, like you said, Kit Graham coming back, Rhea Percival coming back from a huge injury. Rhea is one of those players that a lot of people may not really see or know about, but she talks a lot on the pitch and she's a real leader, you know, but very, very quiet, sort of when she's not yelling at the referee, actually. Okay, over to you, Eartha. No, Rhea Percival.
Yeah,
she'll appreciate that.
I think Manners move, I think, has a big statement for me. To leave a club like Arsenal and go across to the rivals is not an easy thing to do. And I think I read her statement, and as a player, she just wants to play.
Yeah,
and
I think which she hasn't been.
Which
at
she hasn't
Arsenal.
Been, and someone of that quality. Oh. So I think in terms of what it says for younger players, in terms of getting game time. Mm-hmm. is more important sometimes than going to the bigger club. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of, forget the transfer window, is a massive message. And I think for me, I've been banging on this a bit in terms of big clubs just getting good players and them sitting on the bench and not actually playing. That shows actually
too good to be on the bench.
You're too good to be on the bench.
Go and to a club. They need her.
Exactly. Yeah. Go to another club and play, because that's actually what you got into the sport to do.
With the World Cup Earth coming
that's
up.
It. Exactly.
There's six Japanese players now in our league.
Yeah. So but they don't really get the playing time, I think, exactly. or the sort of spotlight that. And Iwabuchi only scored a first goal.
They? You you think of Japan when you played
games ago?
When you played their national team, Bex, like they were technically
playing
small, quite timid. And our game's a bit like fast, like people want to see those hard tackles.
More physical,
like, it's a more physical game, and so they kind of. I think they're looked at differently. They're not looked at somebody that can cope with the physical demands. They actually can.
Yeah.
Play against them and they'll show you they can cope with those physical demands.
Yeah, but they,
you know,
but
just
they also need players to play with,
of course,
because
they're
so technical. They need I mean is they need technical players around them to really bring out the qualities that they have. Mm. Whereas, you know, Adana Castellanos, the South American player at Man City, like, she's big, she's tough. She can fit in anywhere. Whereas I do think that the Asian players have a little bit of disadvantage coming to the English league, because they need the technical players, like
less touches on the ball.
They've certainly Spurs seems to have done the best business in this January window, in my opinion. To be fair, I'm lying. Man United, Villa. I'm lying. I mean, guys, that
Jordan,
was a joke.
Jordan, 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 short snobs.
Yeah, they're Villa. Obviously, Villa. What about Man United? Just recent, Cascarino and. What's the centre half? The young Canadian girl, Rivette. What's her name? I forgot her name.
I forgot her name.
But
too.
Yeah, they've made some signings. But let's talk about Villa, because we talk about them building that result against City. Their signings.
Yeah.
Carla Ward, manager, getting. Mm-hmm. I think that stability in terms of giving the manager a new contract.
Yeah.
I think that shows the direction they're going, and I think we're bringing in two big names in Jordan Knobbs. They did it in the summer. In the summer they bought Rach Daly in, right? So that's a big name.
Yeah.
Which then I guess when people are thinking about moving and seeing how well she's doing, Kenza Dali as well coming in the summer.
Yeah.
To now add
the
Stanford and Jordan Knobbs to that. They're showing how much they bought in Turner as well. Dan Turner, I think she's been phenomenal for them at the back.
So they are building
and those names I feel will attract for next season.
I think we've got to give the props to Carla Wars, because sometimes we only look at managers that are winning things, and we look even in terms of her like pedigree from before, like keeping Blues up and like how she's been working in the league. I think, like we say, sometimes they go under the radar, but actually the quality that she's demonstrated, the ability to bring in those players, like it's not something that you can sort of just do. To come from
it's
big
huge.
Clubs to come to Aston Villa. Exactly. Has anyone seen Birmingham? Like,
but even, you know,
exactly.
it's
massive.
Me, even the way she's dealt with the goalkeeping situation, they've brought a new goalkeeper in now, and Hannah Hampton, who only just before the Euros, everybody's talking about being the next England number one. Mm-hmm. Now they're trying to get out the door.
Mm.
So the way we talk about management styles and how you deal with players, and we had that question mark, didn't we? We spoke about, is she a problem player? And we all had these different opinions of that. The way that that's being dealt with is interesting. Mm. So eyes peeled for how that progresses, develops, whatever.
Because they'll need that. They'll
because
need
they're not playing her.
Won't they?
And England aren't picking her.
Yeah.
So something's not right there. And look, to take, as I said, a potential England number one and just take her out the lineup and bring somebody else in.
But shows, even, but managing that as well.
That's what
it's
I'm
not
saying.
It's not no
shows
big
the
headline and
no,
it's
course.
Still happening in the background, but it's not, oh, this is a big
that's
issue. So again, the player
the manager,
well-being and still managing the whole club situation. Yeah, it's brilliant.
I mean, Aston Villa reminds me of Wolfsburg when I first came in 2009 and we were in ninth place in the league, and it was just a matter of really getting a few big names that could draw people to the tiny little town of Wolfsburg that no one wanted to live in. But it is a similar situation, like you said. I think Daly coming over has been huge, and then not only that, but how she's playing and scoring goals and winning player of the month, and I mean those are big accolades that go around the world that people actually see. And okay, she's playing for Aston Villa now, so that must mean something. And like you said, Daly coming in from France, I think the international transfers are big as well.
And they're Dali and Daly. Double D's out there, right?
Double
for our
D's.
Boots and bar fans. But let
Daly
me tell you.
And Daly.
The way that they play, because Rach Daly ain't a striker, a modern day striker that likes to come in and link play. She's a striker, a bit like Sam Kerr, likes to work the shoulder of defenders and does it well. With the players like Kenza Dali and Lucy Sanaforth in there now, we'll see those movements early. And that's why she's getting the goals she gets. The interesting thing for Daly now is that there's an international break in a couple of weeks. She's scored 9 goals this season. She's joint top goal scorer in the league.
Nuts.
Do you play at left back for England?
I know.
Or do you play
we come
forward?
Back to the conversation.
I'm not that manager, thank God.
I was just saying, I love the way you say, like, everything's like she's a striker. And then actually, like, even look at the Euro and stuff, she's a defender. No one's even considering, like, on an international level, she plays a completely different position. So, I'll be interested to see what's done. But I think she'll still end up at the back.
Do you think so?
I think so. I think there's enough quality.
I think she'll get
top.
Some time up top at the Arnold Clark Cup. Definitely. Because that's the place to do it.
Yeah, but
are you
really going to use her up front on
what
a big competition?
What if you need her?
If you need her, you know she's got that ammunition in the back pocket.
What if you
pocket,
get a big injury out in the World Cup and you
then
need,
she's
you know,
already there.
She's a great
but
striker.
Do you need to play her there? Or does Avers need experience to play there so they're ready for the World Cup? She's ready.
Yeah.
She's been doing
it.
But
she hasn't
done
it with England.
She hasn't. I'm just going back to the transfer. What about Leicester? They brought in, was it the Australian? They brought in that Australian player, didn't they? Young player. And they got their first result last weekend before this weekend's fixture was called off. But do you think that they need to add a couple more in this window? If they are to fight to stay up? Because they picked up 3 points now. So they're only 4 points, which is a game, 2 games off.
Leicester has to do something. They have to do something.
They let a couple players go, or potential. I've been reading there's a potentially some out. I think they're potentially allowing. What's the striker now? I can't even think of a name.
They
know her. The one that played at City, she was at Blackburn.
Tasha Flint.
Sorry, apparently she's out to Celtic potentially.
Oh, really?
So that's an out. But I think she's a great player. Managed well. She's a great
phenomenal.
Player, but apparently she's or Celtic, one of the Scottish League. So that's an out for them.
That's
Which is an interesting one because she's a good player.
Yeah, they can't be letting players
but
go.
They bought the Australian. I can't think of a name off the top of my head.
I don't see it either in the.
But they need. I think they need signings.
Definitely.
If they are to stay up.
I think obviously Willie Kirk's no newcomer to the league. He knows in order for them to stay in the league and to start progressing, I think he should be already looking about consolidating this season and what they can do for next season, because it's just about survival mode in terms of their performances. But great to see them picking up points. We all want the league to be competitive. And if you've got a team that's just not winning anything.
Yeah.
We see how it is, for example, even this week where you see Coventry picking up their first set of points against Crystal Palace. Like, everyone's like, yay. Like, I think they're 5 points off now. But
cheering for the
underdogs,
isn't it?
The underdogs,
that's
what you wanted. We want a competitive league. We want to see the best people competing. And we want the football to go ahead each week. So,
we've seen Leicester get in Janina Leitzig, who's
the goalkeeper
from Bayern Munich.
Interesting one, that
She's good, actually. I remember speaking to my friend Bayern, who runs the Bayern Munich team. And Remy Simpson is the forward Sydney FC.
There you go.
That's the one. And the one that's left to Coventry United is Connie Schofield, the midfielder. But I still think, I agree, I think they still need to do more.
I also read the frustration in the media around, you know, the writers that get the information that clubs actually aren't releasing information, to help. Just with the media outlets that like to allow the fans to know,
like
updates,
the
ins and outs.
And
the online stuff. Mm-hmm. And apparently the clubs are being really difficult in terms of like saying who's coming in, if it's a done deal, is it a loan deal, how long is it for?
Yeah.
And so all the information is pretty...
It says undisclosed
sealed.
Fee
yeah,
on like
so they're
every
not really,
single one of them,
they're
doesn't
not really
it?
Revealing whether their loan moves, permanent moves, how long for. And I do think, if we are to grow our game, these are the things we have to be transparent with. We know there's ins and outs. You kind of hear rumours.
But if no one does it, then it's consistent.
Some do. I think it's just some do and some don't. Some are easier to work with than others.
I think the ones maybe they're looking at, what's my budget, and if we say that we've paid this or not got that, then they'll be like, then let them pay this.
It's the money thing,
I think in terms of the men's league, the money
I'm not bothered
is
about
like
the money.
I
don't think it's the money that is the problem. I just think that if there's a player that you're bringing in on loan or a permanent deal, just say we bought Eartha Pond in on a permanent 8-year deal.
Thank you.
And I think that information is not being put out early enough. I just think it's quite difficult, especially these people that have really tried to push our game.
That's it.
For many a years, not just now.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
for years
it.
And years,
that's
have really wrote
so
about the game, tried to drive the game. You know, give these people a bit of respect and credit for what they've done over the years. And you know, help them out.
Yeah, I mean, and working in the media a bit the last years or two, I can say that there is a big difference between, you talked about the professionalism of the clubs between different clubs in terms of how open they are or how forthcoming they are and just how easy they are to work with. I mean, sometimes I think they restrict the access of players for no reason when you're like, because they potentially work on the men's side and that's how they do it on the men's club. And it makes no sense. We don't need that in the game. We need more visibility and more support, don't we?
And just so club knows, our DMs are open. So we'll take the information.
What's happening here?
What's your thoughts on, because obviously I'm going to go back to the Beth England transfer fee.
Yeah.
On now, like, we're saying big, obviously, for the women's game, it's a big transfer fee, right? Yeah. We won't say the
what is it, Farah? Come on.
In comparison to how it's transfers going to men's game, but for our game, can you see that continuing? Like, even bigger you think the summer and the World Cup, how big the World Cup's already looking like it's going to be. Off the back of that, can you see, you know, transfer fees being, you know, even bigger, harder to try and get them up, buy players, all of these things, like, because that was a madness.
100%. I think if you look at even where Beth England was in terms of playing at Chelsea, and that she left because she wants to play football, and she's gone for that fee. What about the ones who are top scoring goals, been developed by clubs? Like, I only see that as the baseline now, and I guess the blueprint for clubs to go and get that moolah, because they're going to be doing the business. I think it's definitely got to grow.
It makes me laugh. I 100%. Remember clubs used to put 7 days in just to have a conversation with me, and I'd speak to them and be like, "Yeah, I do want to go. No, I don't want to go. Okay, bye."
I did, but now I don't. What was the do we know one. Like what she was rumored to be transferred for?
Eartha knows.
I don't know.
Everything.
No?
I don't know.
260, was it 260,000, something like that?
Spend on petrol.
I mean, obviously, it's just a rumour. So
I don't really know.
We won't
put them facts
No, it's not a fact. But question on that, because I think after the World Cup, what's going to happen is, I do think that there aren't that many leagues around the globe that are as consistent and top to bottom as competitive as the WSL.
If the game plays.
What do you mean? Like,
in terms
it's not frozen pitches.
Yeah, if it's not frozen pitches.
Yeah, if they actually play week in, week out. So I think there's going to be a lot of competition for international players to come into this league post the World Cup.
But
so
do you think that's for money? Do you
think
that's for salary, or do you think it's for the competitiveness of the league?
I think it can be both, because I still think that there's certainly, like in the German league, the French league, the Spanish league, I still think there's only 2 to 3 clubs that can really pay a top salary, top salary for top players. Whereas I do think that there's more teams that can pay more money in this league, from top to bottom, obviously not all of them. So I think that there's going to be a lot of knocking on the door, international players trying to get into this league, especially post the Euros, which obviously they couldn't do right after the Euros because a lot of players already had their contract set. And then in this window is obviously too tight. So I really think it's going to be pre and probably post World Cup.
It's just an interesting one, isn't it? Because obviously we want to grow our game.
Yeah.
At
and what
international
does that mean
level,
for local
right? So
players?
What does it mean for younger international mm-hmm. players, English international players, when now, which is it's going similarly to the way in which the men's game is in terms of they bring the best players in because it's about winning the club. And actually the concern for country isn't a concern for them, right? The priority is how can we get the best players to our club to win on all fronts that we take part in. Now, in order for us to continue the development of the national team that have just won the Euros, if we're going to keep bringing foreign players mm-hmm. in, then denying younger English players the opportunity to play in the best league, which is what we keep saying, in our league, mm-hmm. then how are we going to push on from this? Because when this crop of players move on and the next crop of players are coming through, where are they coming through from or where are they getting their exposure to the game from in order to compete at the top level?
And this is a concern. For example, even the ones like now, before it's even gone post-World Cup, like the young English players are not getting that game time. And I think this is where the conversation has to be had in terms of clubs are a business and they're just focused on winning. They don't want restrictions in terms of you have to have this much homegrown player. Like they're not, their interest is not the country performing. Their interest is what they're doing as a business in the league. And again, it's that compromise in terms of how do we do both? Yeah. How do we still grow those homegrown players? How do we not compromise that, but how do we still have the best league? And I don't think anyone's really come up with the solution, but I think that's something that we shouldn't let just sort of go amiss. It's something that has to be at the forefront. And I know from an FA point of view, it's something that is always talked about and trying to find solutions. So I think just having that proactive conversation around what we can do, are there any infrastructures? As we said, like we talked about Everton previously in terms of their loan system, I think they've done really well in terms of those loanees and giving those players time to play. So actually, is there something that we can do in terms of a loan structure to make sure that actually those best players
but these players
go
just go
play?
They do, but they go out on loan, right? So you know, players do go out on loan to teams that are lower down in WSL 1, but then they don't play there because then they're fighting to stay up. So what they then have to do is bring more experience in. So then where they was given that opportunity and realised that actually this isn't about opportunities, this is about us staying in WSL 1 because we can't do another season at WSL 2. So these players then go into WSL 2.
Yeah,
so it's more like an under-23 type championship.
Yeah, which is what we were talking about. I think one of the solutions could be training compensation, which they have in the men's game and don't in the women's, where you pay the clubs to develop players so that once they are developed there and then go, they still get a fee back into that original club.
I think they do have that.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
But I think that can be expanded. I think that can be, you know, because a lot of clubs, they don't have that as a tactic in terms of development, whereas like Benfica in Portugal, that's what their whole club is based on, is developing players and, you know, training them out. But I had another question, and it was, did you know that someone's birthday is tomorrow?
I don't know anybody.
Farrah Williams, it's your birthday.
Birthday tomorrow.
I'm getting old. Don't remind me.
Someone bought you a cake.
Who?
So we might have to bring it in here. to give to you. But in the meantime, when we're getting that cake, I did want to mention one other. Are they coming in? Oh, they're coming in. All right, get in there then.
Oh, we actually get a cake. That is so cute. Thanks.
Do you want to do it the American way? Happy, 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 happy.
No, we're not
doing that. No.
Happy birthday to you.
Get in here. Hello?
People would have cut the pod off by now.
Happy birthday to you.
They must know me well. Look at the cake.
It's got like the biggest sparklers I've ever seen.
Come on, girl, get the sparklers in.
Can I bottle
go
at a club?
Oh, mate. Sparkle.
Go on with two.
Woo!
happy.
Yeah. Go, shawty. Thanks. It's your birthday. We go, shawty.
Yeah. Oh, get that badge on.
How?
There. Go on.
How did it clip?
Baz, I got you a present as well.
Some rums.
She got us some rums for her bar.
Go on, blow out your candles.
To kill me. They're not. Oh, I'm scared.
Wait.
She's scared. Thanks, guys. Oh, look at this. Can you get these sparklers away from me?
They're dangerous.
No, danger, guys. Earth on your rum. You're trying to kill this girl's trying to kill me.
Look, there's so many different flavours. I've got some lovely, authentic rum from St. Lucia. Rum, you can't get, you lime. Can't, priceless.
Guys, 40%, 25%, 40%. What's that one?
Only for after when you're well.
Oh, you free F or you're trying to kill me. Yeah, when I'm better, guys.
Shot.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps up pretty much our conversation. I mean, the only other transfer I was really interested in was Mary Taylor from Angel City to Liverpool, because I thought that was an interesting one coming from the NWS over. But we'll see if that makes any difference.
And now going from the Championship manager, London City Lions, Alyssa is going to Angel City as one of the first coach, I think it said. That is a big loss for them. They're sitting top of the Championship at the minute. And I know that the players think highly of her in terms of her coaching style, managing style. So a big loss to the women's game. Right? And the difficulty is we are losing a lot of female coaches in our game, right? And that is a concern. We was leading the way with female coaches only a couple of seasons ago. We've had a massive drop off. There's now four remaining in our league.
And what is that? Is that because, like, I mean, for me, I can see the benefits of going to an Angel City as one of the biggest marketing engines behind it, and Natalie Portman, et cetera. But do you think it's it's marketing as well? Or because the NWSL and that team in particular, you know, isn't that great right now, but they obviously have the potential. Why do you see that, you know, decreasing for as a female?
We will have this conversation on BBB next week and hopefully get a manager on to explain it, because I think it is a big talking point and probably not a 2-minute conversation. Yeah. But yeah, it's something that certainly, I mean, if anyone does listen to this, put your opinions in and we can have a big chat about it next week. It'll be quite cool.
All right, cool. Let's do that next week. But yeah. Sweet. Awesome. Well, thanks for listening. As always, send us all of your info. Hit Eartha up in her DMs for any questions you might have or suggestions or anything. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Ciao. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.